Hi, I'm Tom Power. Welcome to Toy Harp, a podcast about bluegrass. This is the last episode of season two. Here from Nashville is my conversation with Allison Krauss.
I remember, you know, the first time I looked out in the audience and saw people singing words to our songs that only we had recorded. That was just a really crazy moment. Just never thought it'd end up being there. Never thought we'd hear back from Rounder. Yeah. Never thought we would hear from Rounder in the first place.
If this is your first time listening, you can hear full interviews with Jerry Douglas, Allison Brown, Bela Fleck, Larry Sparks, Jody Stecker, and so many more wherever you get your podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Later on.
How do you know when you're on to something?
Usually you don't. Usually it's just kind of hammering away, you know? That's the most of it. And then every once in a while, something will either make you, like, chuckle or make you cry while you're writing. And then you're like, okay, now I'm on to something.
Welcome to the Travis Book Happy Hour Podcast. I'm Travis Book. This episode is brought to you by Thompson Guitars, makers of fine instruments handmade with love in Sisters, Oregon. The podcast is presented by Americana Vibes and the Bluegrass Situation, and our show is part of the Bluegrass Situation Podcast Network. You can dive into all things roots music anytime at thebluegrasssituation.com. Graham Sharp has had the kind of career any banjo player dreams of. He started the Steep Canyon Rangers in college with a group of friends, immediately discovered he had a knack for songwriting, and the rest is history in the making. 23 years, 9 albums, and a Grammy Award later, the Steep Canyon Rangers, behind the strength of Graham's songwriting, have established themselves as one of the best bluegrass and Americana bands of their era. I was grateful for the chance to talk with this insightful artist, play some really beautiful music, and reminisce about our shared history. I hope you enjoy this episode of the Happy Hour. This episode is an edited distillation of the original live episode that aired June 8th of 2022.
Live from the Gray Eagle in Asheville, the Pearl of Carolina, it's the Travis Book Happy Hour! With special guest Graham Sharp! Happy Hour House Band featuring Julian Pinelli! And now, your host, Travis Book. Yes. Yes. Thank you, Julian. Welcome you all to the Travis Book Happy Hour. Usually I have an announcer. His name's Bill, and he's from up north. But Bill couldn't make it. Bill had another gig tonight, so I'm announcing myself, which is kind of how I prefer it sometimes. Thank you all so much for tuning in. And thank you all for being here. Welcome to the Gray Eagle. Big thanks to the Gray Eagle for letting us do this. I think this might be our 26th episode of the Travis Book Happy Hour. And I can't tell if it gets easier or not, but I feel pretty comfortable tonight. So I take that as a good sign. Last weekend, I had the honor of performing as the house bass player for the first ever Carolina Guitar Celebration at the Brevard Music Center. It was organized by my friends at Mountain Song Productions, and it was hosted by Brian Sutton, brilliant guitar player. I was able to perform with Brian, Trey Hensley, Jerry Douglas, Peter Rowan, Molly Tuttle, among others. One of the highlights was playing Me and My Guitar with Jerry. He played on the definitive recording with Tony Rice, and Tony was the topic of many of the backstage conversations. Today would have been Tony Rice's 71st birthday. Tony was a huge influence on my entire generation of acoustic musicians. We're all sort of just simply obsessed with Tony's music. I did a retrospective here on the Happy Hour in May of last year, and just this week released the first of a 2-episode podcast of that retrospective that featured John Stickley on the guitar, Sean Lane of Blue Highway on mandolin, and Lindsay Pruitt on the fiddle. If you podcast, I encourage you to check it out. It's available wherever podcasts are found. If you don't, the whole episode is on YouTube, so you can revisit it. But I wanted to start the show tonight with a Gordon Lightfoot song. Tony recorded many Gordon Lightfoot songs over the years, and this is one of my favorites of his. He included this as the closing track on his seminal record, Manzanita. It's called Home from the Forest. Flashing and the icy wind did blow. Water seeped into shoes and the drizzle turned to snow. Eyes were red as hopes were dead and the wine was running low. For the old man came home from the forest. His tears fell on the sidewalk as he stumbled through the street. Dozen faces stopped to stare, but no one stopped to speak. For the castle was a hallway, bottle his only friend. And the old man stumbled in from the forest. Dark and dingy staircase, the old man made his way. Ragged coat around him as upon his cot he lay. And he wondered how it happened that he ended up this way. Getting lost like a fool in the forest. As he lay in his sleeping, a vision did appear. Upon his mantle shining, the face of one so dear, who had loved him in the springtime of a long forgotten year. When the wildflowers did bloom in the forest. Touched his grizzled fingers, called him by his name. Then he heard the joyful sound of children at their game. In an old house on a hillside in a long forgotten town, where the river runs down from the forest. With the mighty roar, the big jet soared above the canyon street. Common, common life moves on, the city never sleeps. To an old forgotten soldier, the dawn will come no more. For the old man has come home from the forest. Julian Pennelly there on the fiddle. I've been a fan of the Steep Canyon Rangers for a very long time, as I'm sure you all have as well. We're so lucky to have them. I first crossed paths with them when they were essentially busking on the sidewalk outside of the newsstand in Durango, Colorado. And I'll touch on that again later. So I've seen a lot of iterations of this band, and I just love them. They're one of the reasons I decided to move to this part of the country. I knew moving to Brevard, I would have good friends in Woody and Mike, and it has proven to be the case. Mike Ashworth is just one of the most wonderful people and incredible musicians I've ever played with. I really sincerely wish he could be here tonight. The reason we're here tonight is because the Steeps have been graced with one of the greatest songwriters of our generation, and certainly one of the greatest ones of this part of the country. And he's got a unique and distinct voice and an amazing spirit, and he's a wonderful person. So please make welcome to the Travis Book Happy Hour, Mr. Graham Sharp. You want to pull up a stool, and it'll make it a little more casual.
All right.
Get comfortable, and I'll ask you a few questions, and then we'll get to playing music. For those of you who don't know how this happens, we do a little interview, and then we're going to pick a little, and then we'll do a little more interview, and then we'll pick a little more, and then we'll do a little bit extra for those of you who came to be here tonight. You got to do a little something extra for the folks that actually left their house.
That's right.
We have nothing but love for those of you who stayed home. I get it. The internet is a powerful thing. Netflix is endless. Amazon will deliver anything to your door, but it takes a special person to get out and leave the house these days. So thank you for being here. I'm going to jump right into asking you some questions about your history. You picked up the banjo in college. You were inspired in part by Jerry Garcia and a compilation record from the Telluride Bluegrass Festival. Is that right?
This is right. This is
from
right.
From like the 70s, like Hot Rise and Norman Blake.
I think it was 76, 77 compilation. I had a teacher at high school who recommended Norman Blake, and he came and brought his guitar and played for us some like Norman Blake style stuff at school one day. And this is the day of CD bars. So I went to the CD bar, and the only thing they had, was with Norman Blake on it was his Telluride compilation. So along with Norman Blake, you know, and I put it in the CD player there and put it on headphones. And like,
yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. They'd open it up for you and you could listen to it. It blew me away. So it was exactly, it was Hot Rise, it was Newgrass Revival, it was John Hartford, it was Norman Blake, it was Doc Watson, it was Dan Crary. It was mind-blowing.
When you were first getting into playing, you know, acoustic-type music, I don't want to refer to it as bluegrass because it seems to me to be sort of broader and bigger than that. But like, who were your first main influences? The bands, like the musicians and the bands that were really turning you on when you were waking up in the morning and thinking about banjo.
It was Newgrass. It was Newgrass Revival. It really was
amazing.
Yeah. They were. It took a while to. I mean, I think it's kind of like gateway bluegrass for a lot of people.
Yeah.
You know, and people say that about a lot of the sort of more edgy bands today.
Yeah.
Whether it's like the String Dusters or Billy Strings or you name it, like there's something that's a little more familiar. It just feels a little more modern.
Sure.
To something like Newgrass Revival, the way it hit me at the time.
Yeah.
After a brief period of getting acclimatized to that, you know, then you're ready for like some Flatten Scruggs or some Stanley Brothers, or something like that.
That's such a common refrain where you get hooked by something either, Olden in the Way or for me it was like Leftover Salmon and String Cheese Incident and Yonder Mountain String
Leftover
Band, that whole Colorado hippie scene. But real quickly you start to realize that like a lot of the favorite tunes of theirs that I was learning were like old Flatten Scruggs and Stanley Brothers songs, and so you head backwards.
Yeah.
And as you're learning the craft too, you head backward.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I know J.D. Crowe in the New South is a banjo player. Yeah. Just hooked me really, really hard.
Yeah.
Early on, and we went to, it was very much a cultural sort of education where we were in Chapel Hill. You know, we're in this little university bubble. But if you want to go see J.D. Crowe in the New South, you got to leave your bubble. And you don't have to go far. You have to go like 8 minutes. You don't have to go far, but you have to get out.
Yeah.
And it was just So it was so refreshing because at that point, like, I could play the banjo a little bit. So you go out to like Bass Mountain Festival, which was right outside of town.
Yeah.
And it had been like just a massive festival for years and years. You know, the Bluegrass Cardinals were like mainstays there, and everybody had been there. But you get out there, you know, and I'm a long-haired college kid, and first thing you know, you got a banjo, and it's like, come on, get out your banjo, let's play songs. And like it was really just an education to me, and like how what folk music is and how it gets passed along like that.
Yeah, that's such an amazing thing about folk music, is it really is an oral tradition, and it people who are into picking love when other people want to pick with them.
They really do.
It seems like so simple, you know. I just started, like, I you know, showed up at a festival with a bass, and you know, there's not enough there's more jams than basses.
You've got 5,000 friends immediately.
Yeah, it's really remarkable. Yeah. You know, built a whole career on just showing up and being available with a bass. And you know, so you're I'd say, in my opinion, in my estimation, you know, you have a reputation for being a great banjo player, but it's your songwriting that is really kind of what people know you for.
Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah.
At least that's kind of the most compelling thing that you do is this composition thing.
Yeah,
it's kind of the alchemy and the magic. Mm-hmm. How did you start writing songs? How did that crystallize for you?
So, you know, when we started the band, when we started the Rangers, I mean, we were green, like really tender green at that point. And
day old shoots.
Yeah, I mean, it was nothing. I mean, like, you know, at that point we were learning, like, oh, you put these three chords together and you got a song. I mean, like you say, it's alchemy all of a sudden. Yeah. It's like, well, wow, that's magical. This sounds fantastic. We should do this for the rest of our lives.
That's awesome.
But we had one guy in the band named Dave Kuo. And Dave Kuo had been in bands before in the past. And, you know, he was a guitar player. And he was kind of like, guys, you know, if we're going to be in a band, we got to have songs.
Yeah.
Like, oh, sure, that sounds easy. You know, songs, no problem. So, I mean, you just start from scratch writing songs. And, you know, if you don't think too hard about it at the start, it feels natural and it really fits, you know. And there's something about the way that my songs and songwriting has grown with the band. You know, I mean, it's really just kind of been really led me as a songwriter to what I do. I'm not sure there's any way I would be doing it without having a group that goes out and does what we do.
Yeah, you were a literature major.
Right? I was.
I majored in communications, which is like one of the softest majors you can choose, you know, because it's
and
not
you're
really
a
anything.
Podcast.
Well, yeah, I mean, here I am.
Yeah.
I guess check it out, Dad. It's paying off, baby. Great point, actually. But, it's one of those majors where, you know, you write a little bit, you read a little bit. It's all pretty chill. You know, you can get away with doing a lot of different things. But literature is kind of a hardcore major. I mean, you're in the trenches with trying to understand what writing and why, what makes it good.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, I don't know what it's attributable to, but I feel like I had a concentration in Latin, and as strange as it is, I feel like that was the best education in it, because for one, it was my Latin teacher who introduced me to Norman Blake and the Velvet Underground and Professor Longhair and people like that, and also like just the way Latin is structured is really beautiful, like poetically. So I don't know. I hear somebody like Townes Van Zandt sing a song, and like you start recognizing like kind of these structures in it. So that part of it really spoke to me.
How do you know when you're on to something?
Well, I mean, usually you don't. I mean, usually it's just kind of hammering away. You know, I mean, that's the most of it. And then every once in a while, something will either make you like chuckle or make you cry while you're writing. And then you're like, okay, now I'm onto something.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And do you find too that stuff that's kind of sticky that you find yourself thinking about, like if you're thinking about the song, if you're working on it as you're walking around, that maybe is that an indication at all for you?
Yeah, I mean, if something just keeps kind of coming back.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. For sure, I definitely work like accrual, you know, over time. You know, I may pick out something that I was working on 4 years ago, and there's a little piece of it in there, you know.
Yeah.
But and a great thing about the band also is that, like, the band is this great collective memory where, like, when I've forgotten songs or they've fallen by the wayside, they'll pull them out and be like, oh, remember this? And, like, there was something about it that somebody liked. The same thing. They remember it. So it's, like, almost you can, like, download stuff to the band a little bit.
Yeah. That's cool, man.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, it's like the band is the cloud.
Yes. They really, really are. Careful when it rains.
What is... I need to sit with that one for a second.
Yeah, let's move on.
There's a song right there. What's your favorite song that you've written?
Wow.
Or what do you think is the best song you've ever written?
I don't know. I think I actually will do it tonight. I think my favorite song that I've written is one called "Can't Get Home," just because. I don't know why. I mean, part of it is just in the way that, like, that's the one that people come up and mention to me a lot, and that it people, like, feel a connection to it. And sometimes the connection they mention isn't anything that I had in mind when I wrote the song, but it just feels so good because, you know, once you put a song out there, it sort of ceases to be yours, and it's all of a sudden it belongs to everybody who interprets it, and they have it. It's their song, and however they take it. And that's one that just seems to have reverberated in that way the most.
Yeah, I'm not surprised to hear you say that. That song has a lot of meaning for me.
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah, and I mean, I have very particular places that I picture when I do it, you know, and for a lot of the songs. And, you know, it helps me when I'm singing them to, like, put my mind in that specific place.
That's so interesting. I should probably do that more. I'm gonna take that idea.
Yeah, I'm just glad they're not all barroom songs, you know.
Yeah, right?
I get old.
Right, you gotta be careful. I've learned a lot about that over the last 10 years of just how important it is to really be mindful of what it is you're actually saying and what your choruses say. Mm-hmm. And I've dropped a lot of songs that I didn't. They may have been catchy or fun to play, but I didn't love what they were saying.
Yeah.
You know, and some of those are covers in particular. Yeah. There's some stuff that just doesn't feel the same as it did back in 2001.
Yeah.
It's not the mantra I want to be chanting.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
And I mean, like, you know, we're talking about, like, writing while you're, like, processing stuff. I mean, it's not all going to be, like, rosy. You know, it's not all going to be rosy and pretty if you're processing everything around you. So, I mean, we've had songs that, you know, we've gotten together and played them as a band, and they sound good, you know, and people in the band will be like, let's play this song, let's record this song, and then you start thinking about what the actual content of it and what it is, and, like, that doesn't feel good at all. Let's just leave that.
Yeah. Like, it's okay to bring those into form. I think that's a fun part about songwriting is to be, the older I get, the more comfortable I am writing any kind of song that comes up, and I don't get so self-conscious. I wrote this really hokey Christmas song the other day with John Weisberger, and I love it so much, you know. But it's about the hokiest damn thing I've ever heard, you know? I mean, it's ridiculous.
Saying a lot for a Christmas song.
Oh, I mean, well, it's Christmas songs, you know? You got to go there. And 5 years ago, I don't think I could have written it.
Yeah.
Because I couldn't have let myself go there. My identity would have been too tied up in it. I would have felt like, I can't put this out there. And you know, and I don't really experience shame anymore, so that may be part of it. I gave that up a few years ago.
Yeah.
Talking about, you're sort of touching on the idea, just a couple more questions and we'll get to playing some music, but talking about, like, this record you made, Truer Picture, you were making jokes last night about how, you know, if you're writing material that's really tied to a time and a place, it can get interesting to see sort of how that holds up over time.
Yeah.
You know, and Adjusters just put out a record called Toward the Fray, and it's just chock full of what we were dealing with, pandemic, Me Too, Black Lives Matter, the shifting political climate, all that stuff.
Yeah.
And it's interesting as we, you know how it is, you kind of, things maybe feel a little less poignant, even though we're still in the midst of a pandemic, and even though the question of race and equality in this country is one that we'll ask as long as we're a country. It doesn't feel, the cut isn't quite as fresh as it was maybe while we were in the midst of it.
Yeah.
So how is that for you with this project and the songs you've written on it?
It's interesting. I mean, we played last night at King Street in Brevard, and it was the first time I played those songs in maybe a year, and in the public. So it did feel like it was a little bit removed from the moment. But I think also by the same token, I mean, I think we've all. I mean, there's so much of us that is never going to move on from that, you know, in a lot of ways. So
yeah.
I think you know, music for one thing. I mean, for me, it marks time and it marks moments so well, and so many of my memories are tied up in the songs, and I can tell you exactly where we were, like the first time the Rangers played this song, or the first time, you know, Woody and I sang this song together, or something like that. You know, like all these moments, you know, or even songs that you know. You heard on the radio with, you know, you're driving somewhere with the windows down and you were going to see somebody and this happened, you know. Music's such a great way that we sort of mark all our moments.
Totally. Helps us organize our existence.
Yeah. Yeah.
Would you like to play some music?
I like that.
Let's play some music. All right. We'll get Julian Pinelli back out here. Thanks. That's Graham. I got more questions for Graham, but we'll get to playing some music for a little bit here. What could go wrong? What could go right?
I know better than to cuss in my mama's house. Just shut my mouth. And she hadn't lived here in a year or more, but I still stand a little straighter when I walk in the door. There's a fresh coat of paint on the kitchen wall, how it looked before I scarce recall. Somewhere beneath there's a pencil line, shows how tall I stood the day I turned 9. I can't unsee what I've been shown. My body's been and my mind is blown. And I never was ready for the things I've known. I can find that house, but I did my first tour in 94. I was following the dead, I didn't fight no war. And everywhere I went, all the locals stared. And it felt good feeling like a stranger there. I can't unsee what I've been shown. My body's been and my mind is blown. And I never was ready for the things I've known. I can find that house, but I can't get it. They always did, and her roof still leaks on the garden shed.
sign in the yard says it's all been sold. But I gave it away a long time ago. I can't unsee what I've been shown. My body's been and my mind is blown. And I never was ready for the things I've known. I can find that house, but I can't get home. I can walk in the door, but I can't get home. I can sleep in the bed, but I can't get home.
Thank you, y'all. So you learned to play with your bandmates, the Rangers. Like you said, you were green when you started, and that's an enviable place to be, to start as a band together. Yeah. What was it like early on?
I mean, it was great. I mean, you know, first we were in Chapel. I mean, the music notwithstanding, it was great. But I mean, we were in a fantastic spot. I mean, we were in Chapel Hill in college at the time, and you know, we had all these buddies, and so I think the first show we played, maybe we knew 8 songs, maybe we knew 6, but it was at like our favorite bar in the line, when there's like a line out the door, and you play 6 songs on a cycle for about 2.5 hours.
Yeah. Just getting it.
You know, it's Foggy Mountain Breakdown. G! E! No, E minor!
E minor! So you started out gigging right away.
Yeah, pretty
like
much.
Like, you had a band, and you're like, we should...
Didn't seem like there was any reason not to. Yeah.
No, I mean, there's free beer at the gig.
Indeed.
Right? You can pick for yourself, but then, you know, there's not as many chicks there, and there's no beer.
Well, so yeah, you think like in a band, you know, I mean, yeah, a lot of people get into it for the girls, but we quickly discovered it was the bluegrass band, and we were in the wrong kind of band.
Yeah, so yeah. Yeah. Was, you know. Story of my life.
Yes.
Man. so you're gigging. That's amazing. I read Olden in the Way was something that you latched onto early on. That was a revelation for me,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, Garcia. I mean, I traced that to, like, Garcia, for sure. But, I mean, you can go back and listen to that now, and it's still just so wonderful and so traditional, but also has this just sort of loose, sort of wonderful quality to it. I mean, it's high lonesome. I mean, you got Peter Rowan singing and Dog playing this way that, you know, is Monroe, but is, you know, Monroe stoned, and it's just so good.
Well, yeah, and Vassar's fiddle playing, which is like it's like the entire universe.
It really is.
It's all there.
Yeah.
Everything you can imagine. You know, the full psychedelia and also just like the keening tones. They're all in there.
Yeah, it's a... Yeah, Vassar was, you know, so many of the favorite albums that I have, I mean, have Vassar's fingerprints all over them, and I know it's like that for everybody in bluegrass. I mean, he just was such a unique stylist.
He really was. How long have the Rangers been a band?
I would guess at least 20, maybe 22 years.
Yeah, because I, can we give a hand for the Steve Gannon Rangers? I mean... It's remarkable, you know, being a band for more than a week is really hard. Most bands don't make it a year, and mine's going on like 17 years.
It's amazing.
Now.
Yeah,
it's one of those things where, like, you know, when we started, you guys were so established.
So established.
You know, but it's kind of like, you know, you had gigs.
We had gigs.
You had an RV.
You had a van. Yeah,
you had a van and an RV. I mean, you were a big deal. It's kind of like when you're a 5-year-old and you have a baby brother. You know, you seem so disparate. But the older we get, the more we have in common.
We're almost
becoming like middle-aged siblings where... We've shared a lot of the same experiences.
Which is interesting because, like, you know, still, like, I mean, as a musician and a player, I mean, I see how far we've come and how well we've done and how much music and the support of people, you know, both other musicians and professionals, and also, you know, especially fans have, like, enabled us to have a life and, like, support our families. And it's just so much to be grateful for in that. And yet, like, just still hungry.
Yeah.
Not literally, but, I mean, still hungry for the music and to just keep pushing and keep getting better, you know, and still feel like I'm looking at it with that young man's attitude of, like, you know, still us against the world, you know, and we're going to go out and show them this time.
Yeah, and, you know, you make this, you go to a lot of trouble to be in a band and to make up songs and to make recordings, and it's a big risk. There's a lot of overhead. It's, you're away from home, and so you want to take it to the people, and it's always, I still have that too, and we still have that where, you know, we want to play for more people, I can think, for all the right reasons, you know, just because we feel like we're going to all this trouble, we might as well be playing for folks.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and you got to stay hungry for it, even after 17 to 20 years.
I know, and it's, it feels better than ever right now, I'll say, you know, doing it. It really, I can't think of a time I've enjoyed playing music more than I do right now.
I'm so happy to hear that. I hope that we're still doing this in 20 years.
Indeed.
You know?
Yeah.
So I touched on this earlier, but I do want to take a solid walk down memory lane. I did meet you guys first. I calculated it was 2002, and you were in some type of an RV. You were busking at Magpie's Newsstand in Durango.
Okay.
And I begged you to come stay with me, but I was a complete wook in those days. I had very long hair. I did not take good care of myself. I had a neck beard, and you turned down my offer, and it was, you were probably right to turn down my offer. It wouldn't have been pretty. My home was not fit for company.
Well, I mean, we were just staying with David Smith.
So, I mean. David's been texting me all day long. He's so excited about this. But it's funny because not long after that, you guys went on and won the Rocky Grass Band Contest.
Yeah.
And my friends and I, my buddy Anders Beck and I had come across Andy Thorne, banjo player from the Chapel Hill area. He was still in college. He was on a ski trip out there, and he accepted my offer to come stay at my apartment because I told him I'd show him around the ski area for a couple of days and ply him with whiskey. And we ended up playing music for 3 days straight and skiing, and that was... And when I gave him the pitch to come back to Colorado to play with us in the summer, I said, look, man, this is what we'll do. We'll get a band together. You can bring a guitar player. We've got a mandolin player, Anders. We're stuck with Anders. He's in the band. He's a dobro player. He's going to be in the band. I said, but we'll go. We'll win this Rocky Grass Band Contest. And I said, and I know you'll win the banjo contest. I said, at the very least, you'd be walking away with a J.D. Crow banjo for all your trouble.
Which he still plays.
He still plays. He's broken the neck off 9 times.
Yeah, yeah.
But he still plays it.
Yeah.
And we did. We literally did. And part of why we had the hubris to think that we could do it was because we'd seen you do it. And we'd seen what it had meant for you that a little event like that could really help sort of galvanize your group and give you opportunities out in Colorado, which is, you know, North Carolina is kind of the home of bluegrass, but Colorado is the home of newgrass.
Yeah,
and it has the Telluride Bluegrass Festival, and there is a certain energy around the music out there. We like to joke in the jamgrass world that as Colorado goes, so goes the rest of the country. Those people tend to be...
Yeah.
Like, you know, Billy Strings blew up there before he blew up anywhere else. And the String Dusters were playing to 500 people there before anywhere else. And your success at that Rocky Grass contest, I think, was really inspiring for us.
I mean, you know, for me, I don't know if it was that original Telluride CD that I first learned off of. But, I mean, I'll tell you what it was. In 97, I think... Olden and the Jerry had died a year or two before, and Olden the Way was having a reunion at Rocky Grass, and Charles and I and a couple, maybe it was just Charles and I, no, we met. He was on Fish Tour. I drove out there with somebody.
My man.
We met on a dirt mound outside of Rocky Grass.
That's where you meet.
Yeah, that's we had this all planned out.
Any times, man.
And so that was like a pilgrimage. And we did that year after year after year. And eventually, you know, at that time we weren't even playing, I don't think. Maybe we had just started. But, I mean, we made that pilgrimage year after year to Rocky Grass. And that felt like kind of our natural home out there, and still does.
Yeah, it's still such an amazing place, Planet Bluegrass.
Yeah.
Out there along the St. Vrain River.
It's the best.
It's really magic. All right, I just got a couple more. This is kind of this is the lightning round. Now, don't feel like your answers though have to be short. But okay. It's time to buckle down. It's a very short lightning round tonight, because I just want to get back to playing music. But if you could talk to your 20-year-old self, what would you tell him?
Wow. Keep the faith.
That's great. What color is your front door?
Reddish orange.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Nice. Mine's red.
Yeah, reddish orange.
But that's what it
I
is.
I picked mine.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah. Yeah, I hadn't changed it yet. It's nice.
It's a strong color.
It's easy to find.
Easy for the Amazon delivery person to locate. Why? Okay, this one isn't really a lightning question. Why do you do this? And what's the point for you? Like, what's your mission?
Well, I mean, first I just fell in love with it, you know. And I mean, we got into this just absolutely dumb luck, you know. I mean, we had a group of guys who loved doing this and loved doing this together. And, you know, I mean, none of us thought we'd be doing it for any period of time, you know, and I'm sure our parents were like, yeah, go for a year and play in this band. It's fine. I won't say anything.
Seems harmless.
Yeah. But I mean, and now I just feel like it's just so much part of my DNA. I just love to create. I mean, the creation part is what I enjoy the most, you know. Yeah. I love getting out and playing shows and doing all that, but really, like, where I get my energy from is the creation part of it. But yeah, I mean, looking now, I mean, it looks like such a inevitability that we ended up here, you know, after so long. But I mean, there's just so many places where it could have gone weird, and so many little encouragements that we had along the way that's all it took, you know, or just one little step, and you take one more little step, you know, and then something breaks, and you know, it's your life, and you're still amazed every day.
Yeah, right. Eventually, you get to a point where there's kind of no turning back.
Yeah. Oh, is that right?
I think so. I think you're past the point of no return.
You're right.
There's no plan B. Couple more questions. What do you hope for?
You know, I hope for to be able to sort of grow in such a way that, you know, gives us time to both play music and do that and also be here at home a bit more, and just sort of, I don't know, really kind of grow into my relationship with my wife and my kids and stuff like that, which I'm fortunate it's been so wonderful for so long, but, you know, I just hope for the health and the good luck, you know, career-wise to be able to do that.
Yeah. Is there anything, generally speaking, is there anything that you're afraid of?
Just sucking.
Fear of failure.
Yeah, okay, we'll say that.
Your therapist would be like, "Are you talking about a fear of failure, Graham?" That's a good safe thing to be afraid of. I'm not really into snakes. I was working on my kitchen the other day, and we were in the crawl space, and there was a 6-foot rat snake down there. You know, but I don't have mice, so I'm kind of like, you know, because it eats them all. So I'm like in a little bit of a predicament: mice or snake. Mice or snake? You know, I can't decide.
Yeah, I think snake stays.
Snake stays, that's right.
Yeah, because he won't surprise you the next time. You're more scared when the snake surprises you. If you know the snake's there.
You know he's there. And you just got to keep all your hatches buttoned up so he doesn't come hang out in behind your refrigerator. Yeah. Last question. You know, this is the happy hour, and it's not for drinking. It's a question of what is it that makes you happy?
I mean, such a... So, I mean, I feel like the balance makes me happy, you know, when I feel like things are going well, you know, with the band, professionally, at home, you know, in so many different ways, you know, that balance can get thrown off. But, you know, when everything feels in balance, there's just like, I don't know, I have so much to be grateful for that I'm fortunate to be around, so yeah, that's what makes me happy.
Yeah, man, and you live in Asheville, North Carolina, so you got no complaints.
Yeah.
All right, that's Graham Sharp, everybody. Let's play some more music.
Thanks, buddy. Here's a little tune called Coming Back to Life.
can hear his stomach rumbling through his ceiling, through my floor. Sounds just like a 2x4 he's cutting with a steak knife. It's a noisy, messy business, this coming back to life. I'm sitting in my kitchen, hoping for something new. It's just myself, I'm kidding, most anything would do. I blow imaginary smoke rings with my imaginary pipe. Keep my mind on a sweet thing, keep coming back to life. So about 200 yards from here, there's a little park by the French Broad River. And some years ago, I was down at that park with my son, and he was just a little guy. There was a fella sitting there, an older gentleman, and he had a pack of crackers, and he was surrounded by birds all around him. He had crows, mostly crows, but pigeons and you name it. There's only two kinds of birds I can identify, so lots of other birds as well. But my son was entranced, you know, being a young fella, and so he went up to this fella and started talking to him, and it turns out his family had a long connection to the aviary pastimes. His grandfather had owned a gas station outside of Candler here, and he swore that his granddad had a crow on a little perch next to the cash register there. And he kept this crow on a perch, and he swore that his grandfather had cut this crow's tongue right down the middle, and it enabled the crow to speak English just like you and I, possibly even better. And that really stayed with me. That experience. What it stayed with me even more was possibly my failings as a parent for letting my son sit down next to him for an hour and throw crackers to the pigeons, but it's all worth it when you get a verse out of it, so. Big crow by my window's got breakfast in his beak. An old man once told me he could teach a crow to speak. He spends his hours on the park bench. Now since he lost his wife, feeding crackers to the pigeons, keeps coming back to life. I'm sitting in my pajamas, hoping for something new. It's just myself, I'm kidding, most anything would do. I blow imaginary smoke rings through my imaginary pipe. My mind on a sweet thing, keep coming back to life. All right, Jillian. Walking in my sleep, I kept a picture in my head that kept me light upon my feet. The reaper right behind me, twirling his scythe, cursing this damned old world that keeps coming back to life. And I'm sitting in my kitchen, hoping for something new. But who the heck am I kidding? Most anything would do. I blow imaginary smoke rings with my imaginary pipe. Keep my mind on a sweet thing, keep coming back to life. Keep my mind on a sweet thing, keep coming back to life. Yeah,
I mean, we got a banjo and a fiddle. and they go together like peas and carrots, as they say, so we might as well hear them do their thing. Ain't nothing quite like a banjo and a fiddle.
Instead, I'm up in Watertown waiting for the show. to go. Selling darkness is an easy pitch. Passing a torch, long burned out, hoping nobody flips the switch. Coal cinders in my hands, cinders in my pockets, God help me, I remember the flame. Well, the warmth of the embers was gone when I got it, but I got it just the same. And it's just too far to go in these hand-me-down shoes. The generation blues. Private disgrace. I must have huffed a lot of chemicals, polishing the brass, cause I never could act my age. Yeah, choir boys, fly boys, look you in the eye, boys, talking how the war was won. A black and white photo with a soda pop can, grinning like a son of a gun. And it's just too far to go in these hand-me-down shoes. The generation blues. Salt and go make it on the avenue. I got a key in my hand, a key in my pocket. I'm looking for a room with a view. Well, the door's unhinged and there ain't no lock and no telling now who's coming through. And it's just too far to go in these hand-me-down shoes. The generation blues. While I was sleeping, look what these kids can do. What's lost wasn't worth the cost to keep it, so let's just start anew. I got nothing in my hands, nothing in my pockets, I threw away the little was left. Well, if you ain't tried it, don't try to knock it, there's better things up ahead. And it's just too far to go in these hand-me-down shoes. The generation blues.
Thank y'all so much. Thanks for tuning in at home. We'll see y'all back here in a couple of weeks for Chris Jacobs.
This has been the Travis Book Happy Hour Podcast. Thanks for listening. Huge thanks to Graham Sharp, Julian Pinelli, Thompson Guitar, Americana Vibes, and the Bluegrass Situation. If you're enjoying the podcast, please subscribe and leave a positive review. It really helps us out. You can find us on Instagram and Facebook at The Travis Book Happy Hour and online at thetravisbookhappyhour.com. And remember, it's okay to be happy.